to the second episode of the Irish Innovation Show, powered by Enterprise Ireland. I'm your host, Aidan McCullen. Over the next few weeks, we will bring you stories of innovation, tips from changemakers, and information about a variety of supports that are available. Today's episode is part of a series called Innovating in a Crisis. And today I'm joined by another Irish success story. We're joined by Chief Technology Officer of Hybrigene, Dr. Gary Keating. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Aidan, and thanks for having me on.
It's great to have you on the show, Gary. I was thinking about the great success of Hybrigene, and I'm reminded of a brilliant quote by the soccer genius that is Lionel Messi, who said, "I start early and I stay late, day after day, year after year. It took me 17 years and 114 days to become an overnight success." And I shared that quote because I felt this was a fitting quote to share the case of Hybrigene, because it may appear that your low-cost rapid test for coronavirus is an overnight success, but it's a result of years of early starts and late finishes.
And it's been messy as well along the way at times. We've been in existence here as Hybrigene, really in a practical sense, since the end of 2014, when I joined a team of what was three people at that stage. And really the genesis of the company was linked to the development of a rapid test for bacterial meningitis that came out of the Royal Victoria Hospital in Belfast. And that was the result of funding really from bereaved parents groups, so charity funding. There was a commercial opportunity there to take that test and bring it to market. And that was really what we spent the first, I suppose, 12 months of the company's life doing. So we launched that first test for the most dangerous type of bacterial meningitis in 2015. And from that, we've grown the menu. So now we have the coronavirus product is our 13th product on the market. And we've refined the technology as much as we can through the intervening 5 years. But really, we started off with a test which was really very fast and really very accurate, and which was able to detect the most dangerous type of bacterial meningitis without doing an invasive procedure called lumbar puncture, which is generally what they have to do to detect this disease in the nervous system of primarily kids. And we have a method where taking a swab from the back of the throat was sufficient to give it a good indication of this disease. You know, it's a really nice test from a technical perspective. It has very good performance, very quick. But the problem there was that the clinical guidelines were telling the medical community, no, if you suspect at all that a child has bacterial meningitis, then you go down a certain clinical pathway, you get them hooked up to an IV, you administer antibiotics, and you sort of find out for sure afterwards whether you're correct, because you haven't got time to wait around. So from that initial experience, we learned that it's one thing having a very good test that has answers a question for the medical community, but it also has to be supported by the practice and by the guidelines. So we moved towards tests where we could see that the guidelines were looking for this sort of rapid molecular test. And that sort of informed how we built our menu of 13 products over the intervening years.
It brings us to the next point, which is you've built capability before you needed that capability. And one of the great patterns in innovation is that it often comes from a pivot of existing work. So for example, a startup builds capability and then they reuse that capability for something else. And for Hybrigene, you certainly did this, like we said about Lionel Messi, in a messy way. You'd done the groundwork and had a strong track record in molecular diagnostics for infectious diseases with your HG Swift machine.
Absolutely. So our tests all run on our HG Swift, which is a very small portable analyzer, smaller than the footprint of a small laptop. So it doesn't take up a huge amount of real estate on laboratory benches. It's something that tests between 1 and 4 samples at a time within a period of time of about 60 minutes, and we've really geared that to situations where you really need a quick result. So you're not waiting until you have 100 samples to test them all together to find out what you're going to do next. You have somebody and you need to make a quick clinical decision. And that might be a decision around whether you put somebody on a ward with other patients and potentially have an infection risk, as is the case with flu, for example. Or it might be a decision that's time limited because you only have a certain window to make it. So one of our products, which is currently going through the clinical trial process in China, is for a bacterium called Group B Streptococcus. It's one of the bugs that lives in your stomach. Doesn't do any harm if it stays put. But in about 25% of pregnant women, this bacteria has made its way to the birth canal And if the child encounters the bacteria in the course of being delivered, there's a small but significant risk of disease. And in fact, it's the leading cause of bacterial meningitis in newborn children. And in that case, you have a small amount of time. What you can do is, if the woman comes in to the maternity hospital, if you swab and test that swab, which shows that the bacterium is in the birth canal, you can administer an antibiotic, which is very, very efficient at removing the bacterium completely and allowing the birth to progress smoothly. But you have a small period of time in which you can make that decision. So our small instrument with the 1 hour turnaround time, all you're ever going to want to test is 1 or 4 samples at a time with that. So we've tried to tailor the diseases that we're going after and match them with the strengths of our technology and of our instrumentation.
One of the reasons I mentioned the HG Swift machine was because it's vastly smaller than its predecessors. And you said something earlier on, which is interesting, is most innovations need the systems surrounding them to change as well. And the German physicist Max Planck said that science advances one funeral at a time. A new scientific truth does not triumph by convincing its opponents and making them see the light, but rather because its opponents eventually die and a new generation grows up that is familiar with it. And the reason I share that is because if you even bring in that new machine, you have to convince the ecosystem that that machine is the new way forward. How did you do that with Hypergene?
It's really been a case of looking at the landscape in terms of really both the geographical landscape and the landscape in terms of clinical practice and clinical guidelines, and trying to find out where were the places where this sort of access to rapid but easy to use technology would really be a game changer. So what we find is in certain territories, there's a very entrenched system where there may be a number of large hospitals and diagnosis is typically done in those large reference hospitals. So the samples are sent to the reference centers. They will have the huge array of the rooms full of large instrumentation. And in that way, you centralize the testing. What you sacrifice is the speed of getting the result back. You know, we often hear, and obviously at the moment, diagnostic tests and diagnostic test results are particularly to the forefront of everybody's mind with COVID-19. But we often hear about, oh, it took me a week to get the result. In real terms, the most it should take any of these instruments to deliver a result is maybe 4.5-5 hours. And a lot of instruments like our own will be a lot quicker. But what you've lost is the time for it to get to the lab, maybe the time for it to go from a small regional hospital to a central reference laboratory, test to be joined to queue, for the result to be read and to be sent back to your physician. So there's a huge chain there. And we've identified, certainly in the areas of the globe in which we're most commercially active, which includes Eastern Europe, the Far East, South America, is that there is a real hunger in some areas for smaller hospitals to be able to do this analysis themselves. If you're saying to them, as you said, that this is a small instrument, you don't have to build a room to house this test. You can do this on the bench alongside your existing tests. You don't need a huge amount of training. It's a very simple adding one liquid to a tube of material and putting on board an instrument. And then you have that power of diagnosis to be able to make a quick result. So it's really been finding out where are the areas where people are hungry to get this technology and shorten the time to critical decision making.
Oftentimes, like you identified there, it's in these emerging markets. It's kind of like mobile versus broadband. So in emerging markets, for example, like Africa, they created whole new ecosystems and business models based around mobile, and they totally leapfrogged the broadband revolution because they didn't have it. They didn't have the pipe laid. So in other words, they totally developed ecosystems around what they had to deal with. In this instance, like another innovation tenet, constraints can be beneficial.
Absolutely. And again, it comes down to your offering, both in terms of cost and in terms of what the landscape is for the disease burden. So we find that we have a panel, as I said, of 13 different products testing for one or more infectious diseases, but they're not all selling at the same rate in different territories. And we have some very large customers for products in the Far East that don't particularly sell at the same rate in other parts of the globe. So you've really got to be mindful that the ecosystem, if you like, will only allow you to sell a product for which is a real need in that particular geography.
So to engage those different ecosystems and those different geographies and to understand them, I'm sure there's supports and communities in place that you can lean on, Gary.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're vital because we're still a small company here in Hypergene. We're 20 employees here. in Sandyford. So for us to be able to sell product that we know will have a market into the Taiwans and the Estonias and the Chiles of this world without support is impossible. So one of the key supports of the business, really from its inception, has been Enterprise Ireland. They identified us as a high potential startup. And, you know, we've had support from them, both financial, but also equally importantly in terms of the ability to engage with parties and information you wouldn't otherwise be able to do. So a very useful facility there to be able to access marketing reports. They've also been extremely useful in identifying ways and routes into the available funding mechanisms, particularly European funding mechanisms. So we've been very fortunate for our COVID-19 development. We were held successful Horizon 2020 application as the lead member of a consortium of four different bodies into the development and the validation of the test. And we certainly learned a lot over the years from our engagements with Enterprise Ireland in terms of how to complete the applications, what sort of information was needed, getting feedback from previous unsuccessful applications and be able to build on the stepping stones. That's been a very important thing for us.
Like you did as well with the previous test, you build on every, even a failure isn't a failure because you've learned from it, which leads me nicely to the idea of, you mentioned how EI is helpful from a financial perspective and even from a supports perspective. But one of the keys to the future of business is collaboration. And you mentioned you have a consortium of people. To be able to get into all those countries, you have to be able to collaborate really well. I'd love if you shared a little bit about your story of collaboration.
The very genesis of the company really was a collaboration with Royal Victoria Hospital in Belfast, taking what was a very lab-based test for the bacterial meningitis pathogen and commercializing that and making it something that we could put in a box and ship around the world. And that's been a really beneficial collaboration for us that has forged links that we maintain to this day. We do our business in most of the world via distributors. So obviously we can't have boots on the ground in Asia and in Europe and in Africa. So we rely very much commercially on third-party distributors who understand their market very well, but also understand what might be the next big product that will be important in a certain country, in a certain geography. So that's a sort of a commercial collaboration that's really, really important to us. And then the opportunity through the Horizon 2020 application to get involved with our Chinese distributor and also with our partners in Northern Ireland and in Genoa and Italy to allow us to build on the performance of our current COVID test and expand the areas in which it can be used. It's really vital for us.
And collaboration within the organization is key as well. And I was thinking actually when you were talking about the success of the HG Swift machine and your COVID-19 detection solution, it all hinges on speed, Gary. And I've heard Ibergen CEO Seamus Gorman say, as a company, we are very flexible and nimble, which enabled us to switch focus to something like this as the need arose. And one of the core aspects to innovation success is to have a culture of innovation. And I often think of the idea of the Goldilocks effects, that certain kind of conditions need to be in place in order for something to happen or come to fruition. And this happened with your culture as well. How do you instill a culture of speed and a culture of collaboration within an organization, Gary?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I think to a certain extent, innovation and speed are part of our DNA. I was going to say that sounds a little pat, but they really are bread and butter here. You know, we are 20 people, as I said, almost half of those are in the R&D organization. And we have a team of young scientists, mostly PhD level, and the sort of things they like to do is to engage with these problems, with these new questions as they arise, and to brainstorm. I mean, I'll throw another quote back to you because you've had a few quotes today so far, but I think it was I think it was Niels Bohr that said, an expert simply somebody that's made every mistake possible in a field.
Exactly.
So part of the scientific capital we have here is the mistakes we've made in the past. And if you've done 12, 13 products, you make a lot of mistakes along the way to getting those right. And then part of the culture is to be able sort of to internalize that and say, okay, this is not a negative. We tried something this week. It didn't work. Let's see what we can learn from that. And, you know, we'll come back to it if we ever find a situation in which this will be relevant. So a certain amount of the culture is around being aware that this is how the research game goes and trying to maintain positivity when things inevitably go down a different and surprising track. And then part of it is just having a team of R&D scientists really who are turned on by the concept of developing new products and finding new ways around these problems that present themselves.
So when you build capability, it's not like a failure. It's actually put on the shelf and went, okay, we have that there. Should the need arise, we can come back to it. And then it sounds like the flat organization where everybody's engaged, everybody's part of the same solution when the need arises. But as the company grows, because this is what happens in so many organizations, the company grows, the CEO, the CTO, you guys stop knowing people's names within the organization to keep that culture going. How do you see that going forward as Hybergene progresses?
Certainly, it's going to be a challenge. You know, we've grown quite organically and sustainably so far. So as you said, we haven't really lost that contact point, you know, across the whole team. And in fact, I would say that the collaborations in terms of getting new products out quickly is not restricted to the R&D guys, but also to the production guys, the commercial guys, the marketing guys, you know, who all bring a certain part of the solution to the table there. So what we'll try to do as we, I hope, go forward to greater success and larger numbers is to keep that connectedness between the various parts of the business that helps to foster that culture of innovation.
And Gary, for anybody who wants to find out more about the Hybergene story, where can they find you?
You can find us online at www.hybergene.com, where we have a full download of our current products and our pipeline products. And we have some very exciting things going on in the future, which hopefully will keep us in the public eye.
And that's it for episode 2 of the Irish Innovation Show, powered by Enterprise Ireland. Join us again on the next episode of Innovating in a Crisis. Dr. Gary Keating, Chief Technology Officer of Hybergene. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Aidan.